Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet again another fantastic indie creator interview. It's your caper, Sarah Cody, and we're keeping it geekly with our returning guest, Trevor. We're here to break down Minutes to Midnight, the hour between life and death, and everything in between. Man, it's been 268, so what, 120 plus almost interviews since you last been on? Trevor, dude, what the hell's been up since you last been on, man?
First of all, I shouldn't be surprised, but it's crazy that you've done 120 interviews since the last time I
seems just like
on.
2 months ago, right?
Jesus, yeah, god damn. In terms of what's up with me, man, well, we wrapped up the Helix project. That campaign went swimmingly well. That book is in the hands of several hundred people now, which I'm incredibly excited for. And now here I am taking a huge creative swing with this sophomore project and kind of giving myself a month at home without any conventions, because I did an absolute like steam train tour for about a month. I did 3 shows in about 5 weeks. So that was kind of crazy. And you know,
you've been hitting the podcast circuit hard as hell too, man.
Yeah, you know, very, very fortunate folks want to talk to me about this thing because it's so different. It's so different from everything I've done before, and people seem a little bit entertained by the thought of that, I think.
I love, like, I'm in a little Discord with a group of us, a big chunk. The more I'm not trying to say prominent, but the one that you hear more often, you know, those type of podcasters, the one that kind of like everyone is on there. Everyone, when you have a book, you're trying to get on their show type of level. And so, I mean, we were talking about, you popped up. Someone was like, yeah, I'm getting ready to have him. I was like, I got him like 2 days. And someone's like, I had him like 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, dude, I love just how like prolific you are in getting the word out and just putting that work in. Man, this is a touching story. So we have 4 different short stories collected in 64 pages. Give us a little bit. I mean, I know backstage we were talking about it. What does Minutes to Midnight mean? Like, what is that hour between life and death?
Yeah, so I really wanted to tell a story, or I really wanted to tell a series of stories that were tied together by theme. Because I tend to be a theme writer, which lends more to character than I am like a plot writer. And I wanted to tell stories about perspective and explore them through the lens of different genres and different sort of conflicts. So this idea kind of came about because I got this idea of doing sort of this annual collection of stories that have to do with the time of day as a way to correspond with the name of my publishing label, Pocket Watch Press. And logically, it made a lot of sense to me to start at midnight, you know, the death of the old, nay, the birth of the new. And this idea that it's inspired by the notion that on the precipice of the 2 days, what matters most is the perspective that you choose to carry with you. It's either one of those scenarios where you're sitting there marinating on your lesser thoughts and digging yourself into a hole, or you reach that silent late night clairvoyance sort of you're finding balance with yourself. And I think each one of those sort of paths are like probable, you know. I think so. I don't know, I ended up coming up like over the course of writing the Helix project, so many little ideas came up that I would throw into a Word document. And there were actually six stories that were going to be in this collection, but 2 of them ballooned and doubled in size. And I really wanted to let these stories kind of take as much time as they needed to be what they needed to be. And so we ended up cutting down to 4 stories, keeping the same page count, of course. But, you know, here we are with these 4 very, very different stories with 4 incredibly talented art teams.
We have J. Michael Miller joining us over on YouTube, Minutes into Geekly. I love it. I'm going to be honest with you. I think we got something there. So we got 4 different stories, 4 different artists. Give us, you know, some of these titles and some of the, you know, the creative team that you're working with.
Absolutely. So I'm really, really excited for people to read a new story between myself and the collaborator on the last 2 issues of the Helix Project, Samuel Iwunze. And I did a 22-page story in this book called Reflections and Other Little Devils. It is a sort of paranoia-induced detective thriller sort of mystery featuring this aging detective, Carlos Mancebo, as he investigates a string of suicides in my hometown, by the way, linked to a failed eminent domain seizure attempt over across like a series of properties, like a plot line. And basically what Carlos begins to discover in this quote-unquote suicide case ends up pointing back to the rise and fall of his drug-addled marriage, and kind of sends him spiraling into this Saw-like murder case that results in a story of perception, control, and addiction. This story is most inspired by the idea that when you look in the mirror, the way that you see yourself ultimately changes the way you understand the world around you. And I felt like we could really explore that in a cerebral way with this story, with this character. And speaking to the rest of the creative team on this story, we have the incredible Jerome Gagnon lettering this piece. And he brings his expert eye for story and for flow. And I think this story is very much greater than the sum of its parts. These guys helped me bring something to life that I think is really special and might be the best thing I've ever done.
I love it. I had the opportunity to read 7 pages of it, and I mean, Sam just went off the hinges with their coloring. Like, it's just phenomenal. I was just like in like just awe the entire time I was reading it. Now, hearing that there's like, you know, a nod to your hometown, I mean, did some of that actually happen? You know, we had in the story, the pharmaceutical company is like trying to take property from the shoreline. So, I mean, is there some sort of relevance there?
Yeah, actually. So when I was a kid, Pfizer was able to get the city of New London to invoke eminent domain on a stretch of property near Fort Trumbull so that they could build like laboratories and headquarters and such. And about 20 years later, kind of Pfizer pulled out of New London after forcing people to sell their homes and in order to build these facilities. And so I always wondered, like, what would happen if one, this mega corporation failed to invoke eminent domain? Well, it's a mega corporation. They would get the land. Like, they would get the land some way or another, and they'd find a way to do it inexpensively. And so it's this idea that I'm kind of leaning into the mystery of, you know, this because like these suicides all occur across the property line that the company was looking to buy out. Now, it's taken 20 years, but over the course of 20 years, you have these strings of these suicides taking place in the homes to cheapen the value of the property. So although it's taking more time, they're coming in and they're buying it for nothing in order to basically further their goals. And it, you know, that really is a backdrop for Carlos to reopen this case that he failed to solve 20 years ago or at the start of his career. And, you know, like I said, somehow opens up some core wounds for him and leads back to his failed marriage.
Perception is a powerful tool, like how you view things, like how, the mindset you put yourself in when you're viewing things, you know, all of that, like, really colors, you know, the way you look at stuff. And I think that is it's really powerful how you utilized it within this. But we have 3 other stories as well. So, I mean, and if I'm not mistaken, these kind of all like intertwine in one way or another.
Thematically, yeah. Yeah, thematically, like I said, we're playing with these themes of perspective or a lack thereof. And so when I think about Carlos's angle on it, it is about like how your understanding of yourself paints the world around you, and how, you know, whether it's explicit or not, there are ways in which we let other people control us and control our perception of ourselves, and therefore control the way we interact with everything else in our lives. And that's sort of our in with Carlos in these next stories. This next story, for example, being a coming of age story, is a little different. We handle it in a much more, for the time being, a much more innocent kind of way, as opposed to something like Reflections that is kind of skeptical and cerebral and prodding.
So, you know, who's the creative team involved with this one?
Yeah, so the second story is called The Marvelous Misadventures of the Melancholy Man, which might be
I love
my favorite title.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun to work on, and I had the pleasure of doing so with an incredibly talented artist named Steph C. She has like this incredibly animated and vital style of rendering and developing sort of character acting. You know, like you can feel what those characters are feeling in such a sort of symbiotic way. And it's because she has like such an expressive style. And then we have Micah Myers on letters for this story. So got a really, really solid team. And what this is like I mentioned before, a supernatural coming of age story about an empathic boy who turns others' woes into gold. He's named after King Midas from the Shakespeare work, King Lear. And this character has to learn to find balance in a life where touching someone could mean healing their mind at the cost of his own, or vice versa. Ooh. And the first, this story that we're picking up with him on is actually the first of several. I really want to come back to this character and to his story every year in one of these annual collections, and really explore what that path is like for a character who exemplifies someone who is moved to emotion based on his relationships with other people. Like this story is kind of about the person that is all too willing to give up a piece of themselves in order to help someone else. And it speaks sometimes to the way that we compromise ourselves in order to help other people, and how that can sometimes become that can make us bitter, you know, mm-hmm. and resentful. And this first story kind of finds him entangled in a childhood conflict that first, you know, makes him sort of face down that moral pendulum of whether or not to act in self-preservation or self-sacrifice. And that's kind of what this story is all about. And one really, really fun element to this story, I have to admit, is that there is a sort of famous figure in comic book history that appears as a recurring side character to present like another sort of meta element to the story.
Oh, that I love it.
I think people are really, really going to enjoy.
So we have two other stories, but I think the perfect way to handle those, let's pull up the Kickstarter, check out the interiors for the first two we talked about. And then, you know, while I ask you about the other two, we'll have those interiors to kind of look at and see some of this lovely artwork, you know, just up close and personal. So give me just a few seconds and we'll just switch right over.
Sure.
And pull this right up. So everyone that is watching, thank you for joining us on the Job for Cody and Keeping It Geekly. Let me go ahead and get the link for this. And we're going to share this in chat. If you guys are watching, we would love to see you back this project tonight. But simply putting this link on Facebook and Twitter, word of mouth is 100% free. You have nothing to lose sharing this, you know, putting this on Twitter, putting this Facebook, costs nothing to post that. So, you know, let's make it happen. You're going to have a friend or family member who is going to love this. So we are looking at Minutes to Midnight, The Hour Between Life and Death. Currently at $4,181 of a $6,500 goal, with 79 backers and 28 days left to go with Project We Love. So 2 days into it, man. I know like last night we had a space about it, but you know, how are you feeling? I know this is kind of a more personal project for you. So I mean, how's today going for you, man?
It's doing pretty well. You know, I'm grateful for the people that have shown up so early and get, you know, who have chosen to get in on the ground floor. One of the things I offered that I've never done before is like an early bird discount, just as a thank you for those people that are just sort of unapologetic and fierce in their support enough to get in so early. And we're doing all right. You know, it's hard to say because this is my first time playing outside of the Helix Project sandbox. And, this is a project whose commercial viability was not thought about at all in the making of the project. this really is the most purely creative thing I've managed to do so far. And it was just like, I believe in these stories. They mean a lot to me. They push the boundaries, I think, of my capabilities as a storyteller in a big way. I'll think about the commercial viability after. You know?
I love that. And, you know, it seems like you can just get a lot more personal and in-depth with this story as opposed to, you know, the other one. You know, I know that was a series and, you know, I'm sure having multiple issues just pile on top of one another that kind of led to, you know, a little bit more of a following. But this one, you know, you're able to really dive into some personal aspects. And I think that really, you know, it hits so much harder.
Yeah, it's great in many ways because it gives me so much freedom, in a way that I didn't really have for the Helix Project, and it's both a little frightening because it's like you're given all this extra room, but I think the thing I appreciate the most about this project is I never really had to second guess what to do with all that space. It mm-hmm. it was all determined by the stories, and having that kind of guidance from the characters and from the work itself is really, really comforting. You know, like I said, originally there were going to be 6 stories in here, and Reflections and Other Little Devils and another story that we'll talk about shortly, Time Fleeting War Immortal, doubled in size. And I did not want to shortchange those stories. I wanted to let them be what they needed to be. And shout out to a mutual friend of ours, Richard, who really helped me understand that, for example, that reflection story did need that little bit of extra space that I, you know, like I had, he's the first person I have ever asked for writing advice from. And so I had sent him the script at the time. He's like, this sounds like a really good first part of a story, but it was a first part of a story. And I was like, you know, you're right. Like I did feel like I was shortchanging myself a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so if it wasn't for him, I don't know if that story would have become everything it ended up being.
So right here is Reflection and Other Little Devils. Just some of the interiors. We kind of talked about this a little bit more in depthly, so we'll just kind of check out just how lovely and gorgeous Sam's work in this. This page was just so gorgeous. Kind of the reflection of the cars and the door, and then the puddle, and then like the bloody mess that like led to it. I just love this scene in particular.
Thank you, man. Yeah, like Sam is really kicking it up to another level. And like I said, we're both kind of leaning in a really experimental direction. I mean, mm-hmm. while you can see panels in that page, they're very non-traditional panel structure, and there's a weird sort of flow about it. And we're really playing with the way that the form of the page is kind of subconsciously impacting the reading experience. How are we affecting tone by playing with things like that, and atmosphere and mood? And really, like, Reflections is very much reliant on all three of those things as very crucial elements right off the bat.
You know, this page was really visually striking as well too, because you have the detective right here, and then it's like he has a facial expression right here, but the one in the other, the reflection, seems just a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah, we're really playing with the way that, I mean, it's called Reflections and Other Little Devils, so we wanted to play with that. And it's interesting, one thing that I think people will have a fun time looking out for and acknowledging is that as you go through the story and Carlos is beginning to think about his relationship with his ex-wife, all of those memories are reflected in artifacts of tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
So
like right here, these glasses.
Right. What does that say about the relationship? What does that say about how it relates to the crime at hand, right? Like that first page that you had shown, that sort of mosaic, you know, those memories are reflected in the pools of the victim's blood, you know? And then on that second page, the actual panel structure itself is the window on the left of panel 4. Like we're looking in through the window, we're playing with this sort of steam and the mm-hmm. the little bit of like fog from the rain outside, changing the way that we're looking through it and looking at Carlos, and yeah, we're having a lot of fun experimenting with how form affects the reading experience.
And Sam's just had a knack for his paneling. I love like the blinds kind of being the panel break here, and then the detective in between and out of them, and then you see the glasses right here, but then you see the up close with you know, just these visuals, and the way the color palettes are just gorgeous. Yeah. And then we have Marvelous Misadventures of Melanaki. I cannot say that word. That's another one that catches me.
Melancholy.
Melancholy. I knew it was a simple one. It's whatever reason, the Kali. This does not look like Kali to me. Man, so these are gorgeous. I love this color scheme so much. Who's the artist again?
Steph C. She's,
yes. She's gorgeous. Incredible.
And you know what this makes me think of? It makes me think of a lot of like Pixar animation. Just like these mm-hmm. big, expressive, yet somehow incredibly human faces. It's so
I love like the purple, like the purple blue like essence that's kind of like just like right here, just like on the face a little bit, on the hand a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, right here on the baby, like just like the splashes of it. It's so gorgeous. It's like I don't know even know how to explain the feeling. It's like is it watercolor?
Yeah, so she layered earth toned colored pencils under watercolors.
Wow. That's gorgeous.
Yeah, she did an unbelievable job. Steph is just a ridiculously talented artist and incredibly professional and thoughtful in her work. It really was a joy to be able to work with her on the story.
So are the colors going to be like usage of like for the feelings? Like, can you?
Yeah, it's okay. Her colors are very, very expressive. You know, when mm-hmm. we were talking about our approach to this story, there was a certain vitality that we wanted to bring in, like the shapes of the characters' faces and the sort of lines that construct them. But the colors we wanted to be a lot more based on emotion and a lot more based on feeling. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you have some of those situations where the color kind of sort of spreads out, as you can see there. And it's not like the tightest coloring, but I think it really, really plays to the moment. Yeah. and pulls somebody in. You know, it makes people feel a little bit more enveloped by the story itself.
Real quick, we have Primal Genocide over on Job for a Cody. Was about to say, I haven't seen you stream in a while. You know, I was just saying earlier to my good man, Trevor, that I just started tying in Job for a Cody and keeping it geekly together, because it's almost like a no-brainer. I should just be streaming this content on both. Because why not? A larger net will always catch more fish. Just like you tuning in. So thank you for joining us, Primal. I appreciate it. And that link is in the chat if you want to check this out with us. So we are looking at Time Fleeting War Immortal. What an interesting title here, too. What's this about?
So this story is really interesting because it was one of the two that ballooned in size. It's a Dante Alighieri-esque historical fantasy, which means it kind of plays on a more traditional execution of comedy where it is kind of inherently tied to tragedy, right? Mm-hmm. And it follows two nearly immortal soldiers as they reconvene throughout every great battle in human history from the beginning of time, you know, at a point before time was actually measured, to the end of all existence as we know it. And ultimately this kind of spirals out into a timeless story about the changing landscape of war, the way adversity is sometimes conditioned by these temporary fleeting ideas of the time, and really that at the end of the day, whether you're immortal or not, you never quite have enough time, you know.
Yeah.
And so this story I think the way this story evolved, I think, is particularly interesting because Reflections and Other Devils needed space in order to flesh out what had come before, right? Like it needed to flesh out what I had already written. This story really sprawled out and became something different by expanding the story. This started as more of a contemporary black comedy, and because of the extension ended up, like I said, kind of growing into a more like Dante-esque historical fantasy. You know, and Dante, for people, like the reference is like the Italian classic Dante's Inferno, mm-hmm. In that regard. And so, yeah, it's I think in some ways the most complex. My most complex attempt at exploring theme in a comic book story yet. The artist on this actually was my colorist for the Helix Project.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Marcio Freddi.
What a small world. I was going to ask, is the dude on the left always whipping the dude on the right's ass?
Well, not always. No, there's a little bit of a back and forth.
You know, I was curious. Because I'm wondering if this is like the main like head honcho dude or the, you know, maybe the antagonist that the dude has to overcome eventually. But I just love how, you know, just right off the rip, I'm looking, I'm like, dude, the dude on the left is just always whipping ass right now.
Yeah, it's a really interesting story because these two characters, I think there are a couple really cool elements. One, for like a history nut, pretty much all of the battles that occur are real battles throughout our human history. So with the exception of the sort of the cavemen, the battle with the cavemen, because that's kind of, you know, a time before we recorded time. But this next one that you're looking at here is the Siege of Githium. And then we pick up in the Norman Conquest, the Battle of Yorktown in the American Revolutionary War. And then you know, we, like I said, we begin to explore how the landscape of war really does change. So after that, they're American gangsters, and then they are political opponents in a debate.
That's cool.
And then, yeah, and then they're the heads of pharmaceutical companies who are trying to ruin each other's reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they're old men online, just kind of pathetically arguing with each other on Facebook. You know what I mean? Like,
that's awesome.
So yeah, I think it just, I want to explore the idea that sometimes we're pointed at one another. Like, we're told to point a dagger at somebody else because of these ideas or these notions that are fleeting. And what this does is it births conflict and animosity and perpetuity that really doesn't matter, that really doesn't go anywhere. Because, like, if the ideal isn't strong enough to extend beyond generation, then why should that hate? You know?
I love it. We have our good friend Faye over on YouTube. Dante Inferno, part of the Divine Comedy, which is a trilogy. Spoiler God is a reading rainbow. I'm not exactly sure what that last part means. If you want to give us a little clarification on it, I'm sure we can get back to it. But definitely, I loved the Divine Comedy. That was one of my favorite books to reading. Like, I think that was like, I don't know if it was a requirement in your school, but in our school, I want to say they gave us a little bit to read. And I loved it. I love following the journey all the way down. And that was, I think, our first kind of like idea of what hell looked like, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. With the exception. Yeah, actually, because it did come before Paradise Lost. I think that and Paradise Lost were two very crucial.
I want to say that was the first like visual description of Satan.
Right. Yeah, I think so too.
No, that is cool. And then last but not least, Bear Market Businessman. So it looks like maybe some stonks involved.
Yeah, definitely a form of stonkage. This story is interesting because it is technically a sci-fi future. Although the focus is how this sci-fi future as a setting plays into the interpersonal drama of mm-hmm. this story, and at the end of the day, that's what this story leads with. Centuries in the future of this neon adorned New York City, everything sort of weighs down upon the richest man in the world, who somehow has everything and nothing at all. And on the edge, the kind of thrust of this story, he has to figure out how the key to survival is essentially the choice to live. And this story in some ways is very small, but it's also, like, I think the most emotionally raw story I've ever done, the most emotionally honest.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Ryan Best helming art duties on this. And he, you know, like Steph, evokes a certain level of vitality in his art, but he does it through these very different stylistic leanings. He uses these very sort of, thick, flowing lines in order mm-hmm. to construct these characters and their expression. I mean, just the way that his work is able to capture movement and emotion through those sweeping lines, I think, are really, really special, because it implies like this mastery of understanding form. And Ryan just knocks it out of the park. And like, shout out to him, because I had a colorist lined up to do this story. And when we were talking, he was like, I really want to color it. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'll pay for you to color the first page. I'll give you a trial page to see how you do. And when he turned in his first color page, I realized I would be an absolute idiot not to let him color this story.
You want to do a few more?
Yeah. So he just did a phenomenal job, and really, I think, captured the spirit of what I was going for.
This scene in particular is just so gorgeous. Holy crap. Just the color like emanating from like the rooftop and everything.
Yeah, he did an absolutely beautiful job.
So yeah, and then we have, of course, the Area 51 Helix Project right here, all the covers in their glory. And if you look right here, is the issue with my little pull quote on it. So always love to point that out whenever we can. Oh man, and then some gorgeous interiors, of course, from this book. This has Sam, which was the first artist, or the artist on the first story that we were talking about, as the main penciler in this. He do his colors in this too, or did you had a different colorist, right?
Nope, Marcio. So the guy that did Time Fleeting War Immortal actually colored every issue of the Helix Project. And actually, funnily enough, Marcio did the art for the cover of issue 6 that you have.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's go. Let's go. And then let's go through some of these tiers. So we have the reward right there. That box is super gorgeous. So we got it's a mystery box?
Yep. Yeah, so we have 10 copies of this mystery box available as an add-on. So these mm-hmm. this section, they're sort of specialty add-ons that I wanted to highlight. So aside from like the mystery box element, they're the size of an absolute edition. So the boxes are actually made for you to put your Pocket Watch Press comics in and put them on the bookshelf and just have like a cool comic art spine to identify them with. Yeah, thank you. As opposed to putting them in a mystery box or a long box where they'll sit forever. Mm-hmm. In terms of the actual mystery box element, you are guaranteed at bare minimum what you pay for the box, which is $50. But to be honest with you, I've never just given somebody what they paid for. I've always given people more than what they paid for. Mm-hmm. But you can get up to $250 of value. So while you can get a number of things in the box from fine art paper prints, metallic prints, metallic art plates, to covers, rare covers of the Helix Project and now Minutes to Midnight. But you also have sort of these high-end prizes that you could find in there, like CGC Signature Series copies of my work.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, man. Sketches from either me or a member of my art team. pretty much full-on art commissions. There'll be a full-on penciled commission from Ryan Best in this batch of boxes, which I'm really stoked for. We have a one in two exclusive mini print that somebody can get. So you mm-hmm. have a 50% chance of getting that beautiful stripped down print of the inks to the Helix Project issue 1 reprint cover. And just like a bunch of cool stuff, you know, enamel pins, merch like t-shirts. Some of the stuff has been previously really released. Some of it mm-hmm. has never been put on sale. So just a cool variety of stuff.
I love this too. Be Dangerous, Read Comics.
Yeah, that was a fun one to design. Funnily enough, I had a little pushback in our little social circle. They're like, what does that even mean? And I was like, it means exactly what it says. So I kind of ended up pulling the trigger on that anyway. So I hope people like it.
No, I love it. And right here is a quick scroll of some of the creative members on the team. And then we'll go ahead and scroll through these rewards as well. So, hell yeah. And everyone watching, right here is the link. Be sure to check this out with us. And like I said, if you can't back, simply putting this link wherever you can works just as well. Word of mouth is always 100% free. Let's dive right in. So we are looking at the PDF for this. $10. Wow, 64 pages. Outstanding price for the PDF there. And you get $19. You get the Pocket Watch Press Digital Library. So how many books are in this?
So, I mean, it's kind of complicated because you get all 6 issues of the Helix Project, but you also get the new edition versions mm-hmm. of issues 1 and 2 that were reprinted. And in those new editions, aside from getting brand new covers with new pull quotes from incredible folks like Cody, you also get some behind the scenes looks. So they're behind the scenes featurettes.
Okay.
At the end of both of those reprints, which you also get in there. So you get both versions of issue 1 and 2, but you have all of the Helix Project series, in addition to all of Minutes to Midnight, for a total of 228 pages for $19. So if you're interested in seeing whether or not I'm blowing smoke or not, I think the $19 price tag is a pretty inexpensive way to test that out.
Absolutely. And then at $22 or more, we have Minutes to Midnight cover A. This is going to be this cover right here. Another gorgeous cover.
Yeah, we did. For the first 2 days, a couple early bird discounts for people to get in on it. So, for example, for early bird, that was $20. Mm-hmm. You know, not a crazy discount, but just a little bit to say thanks to the people that showed up day one.
And then we have the cover B at $27. So outstanding price on that as well. I love how you continued the pull quotes with this as well. It's a nice touch, I feel. And then we have cover C at $30. So this, I think you still have the early bird on.
I do believe so. I think on the bottom of that reward, it'll tell you how much time you have left to get in.
4 hours to go, guys. So you have 4 hours to go and you get an outstanding price. What's this going to bump up to after the early bird is off?
32.
Okay, so $2 more. Save $2, though, guys, and then you can make sure to tip that $2 to Trevor as soon as you back. So,
or, you know, use it to buy a cool bookmark or something, you know, get something cool out of it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that cover there is by the incredible Fraser Irving. We haven't had the pleasure on working on like interior art together, but he's someone I've been eyeing to work with for months. His work is just very moody. And it's got like such an atmosphere to it that I thought would lend super well to this project. So I'm so excited to have him doing a cover for Minutes to Midnight.
Absolutely. And then at 35 or more, we have Minutes to Midnight cover A plus art print. And then at 75 or more, you get the variant cover bundle. So awesome prices on these tiers. You can at 88 or more, you get the Timekeeper, which is the book print shirt. And oh my, what's this oh my about?
Well, I mean, oh my. I mean, you get a bunch of stuff. You get all three copies of the book. Or no, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I think you get the A and the B covers. You get an art print, which is going to be voted on by the backers the end of this week. So I'm going to kind of put up a couple of potential pieces for your approval. And, you know, you guys get to choose what you get. And, you know, I'm not saying that it's definitely going to end up being a metallic foil art print, but my last three campaigns all unlocked that stretch goal to convert the print to a foil print. So, you know, that might be something worth getting in on and making sure it happens. Mm. And then you have a really cool Minutes to Midnight t-shirt that
absolutely comes in with that. And then that is right here. Let's go ahead and take a larger look at it as well. Getting a little bit faster with my scrolling. And it is right here. So this is an awesome shirt. I love just a nice clean logo on it. I think that fits perfect, you know, white and black. We have Faye, $19 for 6 ebooks isn't a bad deal. What's the message? What do you want readers to get besides entertainment?
So first of all, even better, actually, $19 for 7 books, and that 7th book is the size of 3 books essentially. Ooh. So you're getting almost 9 books worth of content. But what, remind me of the question, Cody?
What do you want the reader to get besides entertainment? How would it move me or others?
Oh man, that's a fantastic question. You know, so this story, I think it was in my press release, but this story kind of came about because I realized that as I got older, that everything you hear about what adults should be or what adults are is a lie. I grew up in the internet age and my early 20s were spent in the pandemic. And I realized that, you know, your parents tell you adults don't do this or an adult behaves this way. And you realize it's not true. And that was like the most disappointing thing about growing up. And growing up in that sort of that combustion chamber of which the internet kind of became during the pandemic, where everybody was going stir crazy and was nervous about the state of the world, and I felt like people lacked perspective. You know, I felt yeah. like people became far too insular, despite the fact that communication is global. People and their sort of tribalistic their tribalistic sort of ideas about the world really hardened and calcified. And I wanted to tell a story about perspective. I wanted to tell a story about how, like, basically, like, each of these stories to a degree are about how, you know, if these characters don't change their perspectives, like, it's like grow or die, you know? And I don't mean that in like a combative sense, but I think that is generally true about life, you know. Yeah. Like, if you don't grow, if you don't choose to change and allow yourself to take in the world around you, I think that is character death. I think that's the
I believe that as well. You have to adapt. You have to be like water.
Yeah And so that's part of where the story comes from. You know, these characters have to learn to grow or become the worst version of themselves. And so we're sort of exploring that through these different genres, through these different character struggles and their conflicts. And that's, if anything, I think, I hope that's what people get out of this collection. Although I think each and every one of these stories individually kind of serve to present their own like moral and emotional quandaries. Mm-hmm. But I just hope people look at this and go, man, it's just good to keep your eyes open and be perceptive to the messages and the lessons that life affords you.
Absolutely. And holy crap, what a response. What a response. Then we have at 100 or more comic shop retail. So you get seven at minutes to midnight. I keep getting tongue twist on that. Of cover A to cover B, a cover C, and then digital copy of the comic as well. So inclusion in marketing material as well. So awesome price on that. At 170, you have the I Love Comics Collector Pack. So is this everything in the kitchen sink?
This is almost every single cover of the Helix Project, all three covers of Minutes to Midnight, digital copies of all of them if you're the sort of strict collector and you don't want to get your hands on those books. It also comes with an early access digital copy to Minutes to Midnight, so you get to read it before it ever comes out officially. This is just, you know, for somebody who just wants to get in and like you said, sometimes people just want the freaking kitchen sink, and I didn't give it to them.
And then we have at 170 or more a comic portfolio review. So hot off the press, you know, Trevor is going to give you a sit down and go over your work.
Yeah, you know, I think for better or for worse, I'm a pretty talkative person. And I think I at my best, I can be pretty articulate. And I think this is a really unique opportunity for the fledgling creator. Just to kind of get a little bit of insight from my perspective as somebody who's done this a couple of times. And so whether you're a writer or an artist, you will submit a portfolio of work to me prior to the call. I will sit down, go over it, come up with notes, and we'll get in on a Skype call or a video call for about an hour and a half. And they'll just kind of break down my thoughts where I think some growth could be made. Mm-hmm. And just give my advice on the matter and obviously answer any questions they might have about the production process, about sourcing the physical material for printing, merchandising, anything they want. Realistically, it's kind of like an advice session for the independent comic book creator.
They also get the digital copy of your entire digital catalog, a beautiful new art print, and then the t-shirt as well. So you're still walking away with some physical material as well. An awesome price on that.
Yeah, and I think they get a cover or two. I think they get two physical covers of Minutes to Midnight as well. Okay. So, yeah, it's putting business and pleasure together all in one package.
And then at 175, we have the Pocket Watch Press Retail Package. So you get all three variant covers, the collection of graphic short stories, nearly every cover available for Trevor's first comic book series at 50% discount. So awesome price on that.
Yeah,
man, I'm loving these tiers, dude.
I believe so much in the community element to local comic shops, and you know, to be frank, putting the book in a comic book store obviously is not the most profitable thing for me to do, but I believe in community. I believe in the role that those shops serve, and I think that there's a real symbiosis to be made, you know, just putting books in shops and getting out there and forming those relationships. So this is kind of me, you know, looking at the retailers who do want to put these books on the shelves, and I want to make sure that they can make their money. You know, this is a competitive price to what they would be getting from a larger distributor from Diamond. And it's a much higher, the margin on these products are much better because, you know, they're larger. They're 64 pages. So I wanted to make sure I could sweeten the pot for the retailer.
No, awesome price on that. You got some awesome tiers. Like I said, we have the official producer status at $222. So you're going to get digital copies of Area 51 issues 1-6, early access of Minutes to Midnight, cover A, B, and C, that art print that's voted by the backers after the end of week one, the t-shirt that is going to have, is it going to have producer on it?
So usually they do. I came up with so they're going to get the regular t-shirt that comes in the earlier tier, but then they're also going to get that really cool exclusive producer t-shirt. Usually I do have the word producer on there, but I felt like that would kind of muddy up the design.
Yeah.
I really like the way that this one came out, but this is a shirt that will never get re-released. This mm-hmm. design is strictly for the producers of this campaign. So I think it's just kind of a cool piece of memorabilia to keep. And to be honest with you, I think this is the one of the most wearable pieces of merchandise I've ever made.
And two shirts, you cannot beat that. So up your wardrobe by hitting that tier. You can get at 400 or more, executive producer, and some art from Sam. Sam is a phenomenal artist as well, so that's cool.
Yeah, that little piece in the that image in the add-on section or in the reward section was actually a commission that he did for a backer on a previous campaign of Sandman, Morpheus. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of wanted to show an example of what he did previously for someone. What's cool about the producer and executive producer tiers, in addition to all of that other stuff, they also get credited as a producer inside the book. So, you know, you get to really be a part of something in a lasting way, which I think is really cool.
That is awesome. And get drawn into the comic at 550 or more. So get drawn into this. Do you know which story yet, or is that yet to be determined?
Probably Time Fleeting War Immortal. So you get to be a soldier somewhere throughout the the ravages of time. And that actually, so that image there was of a backer who paid to get drawn in when we had this option available in the Helix Project.
Ooh, no shit. Campaign. That's cool.
Yeah, man. And there's only one slot left. So get in on it while you can. I think, 4 days to go on that as well. So make sure you hop in on that. You become immortalized in one of these stories. And you get almost everything from most of the prior tiers. So there's a lot of bang for your buck.
And then last but not least, pledge $1,500 or more and get a retailer exclusive cover. So, dude, this is awesome. And am I reading that right? That says 101 copies?
Yeah.
Whoa, look at that. So I mean what's the stipulations to this? I mean is it whatever they want on the cover, or is it a cover of your choosing?
So basically they're welcome to submit an artist for the cover. However, I do get final approval over mm-hmm. the cover art, the design of the cover. I do have a sort of lineup of talent from that people have seen work on this book, people might have seen on the Helix Project, and a little bit outside of that. So I would also be willing to submit an artist for their approval. And, you know, we would kind of collaborate on the cover and the design of it and the artistic pairing and come up with something that makes both of us happy. And so
let's go.
You would get a super, super limited print run of their exclusive cover. And trying to make it feasible for the shop. And like, I've up until this point I haven't done a retailer exclusive yet, so I just think mm-hmm. that would be such a fun time.
And we just had Faye say Soul just pledged 19. Honestly, I've been to a few comic shops. They're not as friendly as they were 10-20 years ago. Conventions are warmer. Advent of ebooks, collectibles, your words moved me like Deku My Hero Academia episode 2. So thank you for the back. We always love to see that. And speaking of that, I mean, we've came to another part of the show where I get to ask Trevor, I mean, for anyone who might be on the fence about backing, what would you say to them to kind of help push them over that edge?
Well, first, thank you so much to Faye for supporting the project. It means a lot, and for the kind words, deeply, deeply appreciated. But, you know, why you should support this project, I think, is because I'm doing everything that I think people tend to ask for, right? People always say we want character-driven stories by people who care about the medium. People always talk about how they want to shy away from the gimmicks and the sort of over commercialization of the comic book art form and of the medium, and that's exactly what this is. You know, this is my purest sort of creative project I've done so far. Like I said, the marketability was so tertiary when it came to creating this thing. I mean, really, it was, I created these things that I care about, that I love, that I think explore these really, really crucial elements to, being a living, breathing human being. You know, perspective is such a broad and reaching theme that I think mm-hmm. people can find their own access point to relate to. At the end of the day, this isn't concerned about being a product. This is concerned about being character-driven storytelling that can relate and connect with you. And like I said, I did it so much so to my own detriment that I don't think this is a commercial product at all. I just wanted to tell a story that I just wanted to tell stories, excuse me, that matter, stories that, that people can, really kind of sink their teeth into it. And who knows, maybe come out looking at the world a little bit differently.
I love that. I love that. So for anyone who's looking to do this, you know, to break outside of their norm and try to achieve something new that they've been wanting to do, you know, as someone who just did it, what would be your biggest piece of advice to kind of help guide them in that, in their journey to do that?
Oh man, it's such a tough question, right? Because
the best are the toughest, right?
Yeah, that's true. I think the thing that makes it so tough right now is I think I've stuck the landing, but I, you know, we don't really know if I did stick the landing yet. But I think, you know, like leading with pure intentions, I think always kind of will steer you in the right direction some way or another. You know, I think despite this being something that's going to require a little bit more legwork in order to get it out there and get it in the hands of people who want to buy it. Mm-hmm. I think at the end of the day, the reason that the people that have shown up already are because they recognize that pure intention. They recognize that, like, as a creative person, I am really pushing myself to do something different and to grow as a storyteller, right? I'm not giving them the same old stuff. This is absolutely nothing like anything that I've ever done, nothing like anything else on the market. And I think that there is a contingent of readers that recognize that and appreciate that. So I think leading with those intentions, leading with the reasons why you are telling this story, because I don't think for most creators, for most storytellers, it's so rarely the reason that they are telling those stories or creating these worlds or spending time with these characters is so rarely because of the same reason that it is marketable or sellable, is because mm-hmm. they have a personal connection to these stories. And all of them explore things that I either have really wrestled with in the past or am wrestling with now. You know, you have Reflections and Other Little Devils, which, like, I think anybody can relate to feeling like they're looking at the world through glasses that were given to them by someone else, mm-hmm. you know? And then you have something like Marvelous Misadventures, where I think we all kind of, a lot of us have those points in time where you feel like you are kind of doing you're bending over backwards to lift someone else up, but all you're doing is preventing yourself from standing up tall, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, I'm exploring these ideas or these sort of raw emotional elements that I've struggled with in some way or another. And some of these things I feel like I have been able to grow up and grow past, I should say. And some of these things I haven't yet. And so this is me creating an open sort of emotional dialogue about these mm-hmm. things. I think I lost track of the question a little bit, so I apologize. But yeah.
No, that's all good. So thank you for, I mean, man, I feel like I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours, man. It's always a good conversation, but we do have to end this eventually. So let's end it on a strong note. And outside of creating, what are you consuming? What video games? Take that back. You don't play video games. What books are you reading? What TV shows are you watching? What movies are you watching? If you listen to music, what are you listening to?
Oh man. So music wise, I kind of been, it's weird. I usually get into like blues and jazz kicks in the fall, when it starts getting a little bit colder, but I've actually been listening to a decent amount of like jazz lately. In terms of like stories, I've been reading That Texas Blood, which is an image book from mm-hmm. Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips. Really, really been enjoying that. I read the first volume a little over a year ago, and I wanted to go back to it, so I reread that first volume. I'm in the middle of the second one now. So I also just picked up the Alan Moore Top 10 Compendium, so I'll probably be sinking my teeth into that after. But I just restarted watching The Wire, because it's just another one of those situations where I watched the first season, I liked it, and however, for this one, when I started the second season, I found myself like bored to death, and everybody is telling me that I gotta get to the third and fourth season of that show.
Yeah.
So I'm choosing to believe them. So I'm sitting down rewatching that first season, hoping I can pick up some momentum to just rush through season two. And so, yeah, that's kind of what I've been into lately. And in terms of movies, I'm like oddly excited to go see The Flash, which is something I don't think I would have never expected to come out of my mouth.
Let's get nuts.
Let's get nuts.
We have a Faye saying it's about soul. It gives you purpose. You want to spark the embers in other. And I hope you're as successful as Cam in America and Let's Play. So let's go. We got some love in the chat for you as well. I hope everyone watching having an awesome night. We do have to end. So Trevor, thank you for swinging by, hanging out with us. I hope everyone watching has a fantastic Thursday. Most importantly, guys, keep it geekly.